If you like secret relationships, job drama on New Year's Eve, men singing Neil Diamond unexpectedly, or a rom-com set against the backdrop of COVID, you're going to love the kooky, uneven, profoundly strange second season of The Morning Show. The first season was an examination of the aftermath of a sexual harassment scandal, but now it's just a whole wild ride where hair color, allegiances, and health status can all change in the blink of an eye. Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, and Steve Carell still lead the cast, but now they've got a new set of very 2020 problems. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about The Morning Show on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With Early Paycheck, you can get your direct deposit up to 2 days earlier. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Joining us is Christina Tucker. She's the host of Autostraddle's Wait, Is This a Date? Podcast. Hello, Christina.
Hello, putting the L in LGBTQ over here.
That's right. You knew, Christina, we could not do this without you. Also with us is Margaret H. Willison, who is one half of the Two Bossy Dames newsletter and one third of the Appointment Television Podcast. Hello, Margaret.
Hello. I guess I'm putting the B in LGBTQ.
There you go.
It's true. And, you know, I said to our producer, Jessica Reedy, I said, me and Margaret and Christina talking about The Morning Show is just going to be like a class that needs one person to point out that only one person can talk at a time. To catch you up semi-quickly, the first season of The Morning Show concerned Mitch, played by Steve Carell, being revealed as a sexual harasser or worse. We followed how his abrupt departure affected his longtime co-host, Alex, played by Jennifer Aniston, and his replacement, Bradley, played by Reese Witherspoon. The season ended with Alex and Bradley revealing on air that their network had covered up and mishandled complaints and problems in this big kind of revolt. The second season jumps ahead to a few months later. It's early 2020. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's favorite year.
Best time to revisit. Alex has left the show. Mitch is off in Italy. Bradley is hosting with a new partner, and COVID is just beginning to become a problem. There are a whole lot of other people to keep track of. Billy Crudup plays Corey, a big boss at the network. Mark Duplass plays Chip, Alex's longtime friend and producer. Greta Lee, who's new this season, plays Stella. Tech executive Corey brings over to run network news. Karen Pittman plays Mia, who now runs The Morning Show. And Deshaun Terry plays Daniel, a Black journalist who is hosting that add-on third hour and is looking for a little more for himself. The biggest addition to this season is Juliana Margulies, who plays another one of the network's journalists. And we are going to talk freely about everything that has happened in the first six episodes of this season, because those are the ones that will have aired when we release this episode. And the Juliana Margulies character, Laura, is having a romance with Bradley, played by Reese Witherspoon. In terms of current events, not only does this season include lots of COVID, as I mentioned, Mitch is in Italy, so you've got lots of COVID, and it also includes the presidential election that we all remember so fondly. So it's a wonderful time. Margaret, I was not quite as concerned about your ability to survive watching this season as I was with Christina,
right.
because of what I know about what excites Christina.
Right.
But how are you doing with this season?
Oh, gosh, Linda, I'm just in love. I'm having such a good time. So I think it might have even been you, Linda, but someone smart who cares about sports once explained that what they like about sports is it actually has the capacity for narrative surprise because it's not scripted. So any kind of outcome is possible. I think that that is the thrill that I get from watching bad art, particularly bad art like The Morning Show, because it's just like there's no boundaries. I don't think they know what they're doing, so I can't predict what they're going to do next. I don't know what they want to say about anything. I'm just here, and it is just a shock and awe kind of experience. Every once in a while, there's a conversation where I'm like, wow, that was really good. More often, there are conversations where it sort of seems like the dialogue was just like, script TK.
Right.
Like, we'll put this here as a holder. And then they never updated the holder. And just minute to minute, it's just a thrill and a delight.
Yeah. So, Christina, the reason why I said I was concerned about your ability to withstand this is that I knew that it was going to play into some of Christina Tucker's favorite things.
Yeah.
So talk to me about you watching this wonderful season of The Morning Show.
Yeah, as dedicated listeners of my Twitter timeline will know, I really lost my whole dang mind for this show, its first season. It is a funhouse mirror version of prestige television. Everything is, you know, on paper, it's right, it's all right. And then you look at it and you're like, no, this is distorted reality. This makes simply no sense at all. The coat's fantastic. Jennifer Aniston's hair, beautifully highlighted. And this season, I was quite concerned. You know, I thought maybe they took the notes. Maybe they figured out how to create a television show that made any kind of cohesive and narrative sense. Maybe episode to episode, even minute to minute, maybe characters' choices will make sense. And the morning show bravely said, no, we won't be doing that. We're actually going even harder. And what we're going to give you is a surprise homosexual relationship between Juliana Margulies and Reese Witherspoon. And yeah, I did lose my dang mind, if we're being honest. I lost it a little bit. I've pulled it back together as much as I can be. Much like the rest of the show, that relationship doesn't make a ton of sense. But that's fine because, again, nothing on this show makes a ton of sense.
And let me just, from my perspective, there are a couple things going on in this season that I find
just
very,
a couple things.
Very strange from a structural perspective. One is this decision to double back and cover COVID, right? Simply because I don't want to think about it. I don't necessarily want a show that's going to go back and think about it, especially think about it in a kind of flat way where you just see a bunch of news producers being like, I wonder if this is important. Like, I get it. It's ironic, but it's not necessarily interesting. Plus, the first time you see Steve Carell this season playing Mitch, the disgraced, quote unquote, anchor who was the perhaps analog to a Matt Lauer type. The first time you see him, he's staying on Lake Como in Italy. It's incredibly glamorous. It's the biggest like house you've ever seen in your life. He's basically staying in a palace. And the music is Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, which I thought was kind of funny. Then he goes into town to get his gelato.
Simple man.
And he is, and a woman, a very caricatured sort of Instagram white woman comes up and is like, no, I hate you. You can't eat gelato in my place because you're a sexual harasser. And so then this beautiful Italian woman played by the incredibly charming Valeria Golino, who really deserves much better than this.
You mean if I knew this was Mitch Kessler from the morning show, I would agree. He shouldn't have the nerve to breathe the same air as someone like you, who I'm sure has done so much for the world in her 20 long years.
Oh, okay, I get it. Well, I'm
the short version is last season was a Me Too story. Now they've become a cancel culture panic show. So that now, without any in between of him sort of really taking any responsibility, first of all, he went from being a total manipulative monster whose behavior led directly to the death of Hannah, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, to this like sweater-wearing man who just wants to be loved and be a better person. And it makes no sense at all.
No.
And at the same time, they're so devoted to this cancel culture panic idea that back in the studio, you've also got the weatherman.
Oh boy, Yanko.
Yanko.
Who referred to the, actually, Punxsutawney Phil as his spirit animal. And like, absolutely, somebody would have said, don't do that.
Especially if the man's name was Yanko. There would be a Yank Yanko hashtag. Like, that's true.
Of course.
That's
incredible work.
But the idea that he sort of no amount of apologizing from him is adequate, and this just goes on and on and on over this one comment, it just feels like the entire show is now a cancel culture panic show about poor Mitch and poor Yanko and Juliana Margulies sleeping with Reese Witherspoon.
The way that they've decided to specifically around Yanko's character, I'm just like, the bare hint of characterization we got from him in the first season, nothing pointed towards that he would become this man, that he would react in this way. And I don't know why I'm supposed to care about it, especially because you've given me Juliana Margulies in a beautiful brownstone wearing like Rick Owens joggers.
Right.
Why are we talking about Yanko?
The show seems to be taking the position of like, the moral of the story is this is all very hard for everyone. Except the way in which it's hard for Mitch is that sometimes people get angry at him when he goes to get a gelato and he lives in a palace, whereas Hannah has died. So it's like, oh, this is not actually equally hard for everyone.
No, it's not. And I mean, we can talk about what every single choice that Jen Aniston as Alex is making, because nary a single one of them makes sense. And all she's doing is making distressed sounds.
So many whimpers.
After returning to a job that she didn't want to return to and has no motivation to return to, as far as I can tell, and is miserable every second of the day. And I just... Why are you here? Babe, just go back to the mansion in Maine. Go write your book.
She was doing the Diane Keaton and Baby Boom. She was doing the beautiful chop your own wood, hang out in the snow in your beautiful gigantic house. She was living the life.
Just like one stirring palm reading from Kathy to Jimmy.
Kathy to Jimmy. Like,
and suddenly everything about her life has to be different. Who could possibly have seen it coming?
One of the things that's interesting is this character of Stella that they have brought on, who's played by Greta Lee.
Poor Greta Lee also deserves better.
Right. So this show has a very white cast of leads, but then it has this entire set of actors of color who are playing these kind of supporting roles. Who have by far to me the most interesting stories on the show. This story of Stella was a tech person who came in, was hired by Corey, played by the, I will say, great Billy Crudup, who I could watch play this weird character anytime.
So weird.
But he brought her in to like run network news. She comes in, she's young. She's very like not really listened to. Alex, the Jennifer Aniston character, is unbelievably disrespectful and dismissive of her. And Sybil, the big high-up executive played by the great Holland Taylor.
Just another attack directly on me.
Another Knives attack on Christina. Gives Stella this speech about essentially how it's her responsibility to show character by siding with Sybil, and especially like by not letting her personal feelings, quote unquote, which sort of includes her experience of racism, affect how she approaches things like Yanko and all that stuff.
I'm talking to you. Talent is running roughshod over you. These aren't earthquakes. They're people. You can control them. And if you can't, you find people you can.
She's being expected to kind of bring into line all of these younger employees of color, take control of Alex and Bradley and all that stuff. But she's also supposed to get Daniel, who's this young guy who bursts into song.
Inexplicably.
Free, only want to be free. We huddle close, hang on to a dream.
Why does he begin singing America in the middle of it?
He is told that he has insufficient, I think, star
it
quality.
It factor or something.
It factor to host the presidential debate, which why are the morning show anchors in contention for that anyways?
And only them, it seems like.
Only them. Just like either morning show anchors or one former morning show anchor.
Well, the other thing is when I first saw him this season and he was on with Bradley.
Also singing.
Also inexplicable dance number.
My first thought was also like, is he playing a character or is he playing Hasan Minhaj? Like,
A great question. It's tough to say.
Because this show has so much money to throw at things, you never really know. You're like, is that Dave Grohl or is that Dave Grohl? Air quotes. Is that Mindy Kaling or is that the morning show rival from
YDA?
YDA. How can
YDA, Your Day America.
How can network initials sound so fake?
I don't
it's true.
Know.
How can UBA sound like the fakest network that's ever existed? I didn't know it was possible until this show.
UBA sounds like an accounting firm and not a network.
Yes.
Or like, you know.
Maybe like a talent agency.
Talent agency, yeah.
It also drives me nuts that it is everywhere in the building stylized all lowercase. It drives me up the wall. Why is this lowercase?
Like it's TBS, characters welcome. No.
Yeah.
That is not what it would look like.
You know, I want to ask you, Christina, about one thing that I saw in a recap of yours in your newsletter. And that I reacted to also, which made me think about kind of what is amiss with this show other than just kind of everything. There is a scene where one of Alex's assistants, Isabella, is at her apartment and Chip, the Mark Duplass character, comes over and is looking for Alex. And this woman, this young white woman, Isabella, who works for this very rich white woman, Alex, gives Chip this speech about how he is a mediocre white man and mediocre white men get all the chances.
What is going on?
You people.
What do you mean, you people?
Mediocre white men.
What are you talking about?
You're always things up for everybody and you're always first in line for second chances. You're not exceptional. I'm sorry, you're not, and I am so sick of it. Oh my God, what a load.
On the one hand, I think what she's saying is something that could make sense in some shows, mm-hmm. in some settings. But it makes no sense there. And that's what I wrote. And then I saw it was also what you wrote.
It makes no sense there. We know nothing about Isabella, aside from the fact that she seems nervous and just willing to do whatever Alex needs her to do at any moment. This rage that she feels towards Chip, which I find fully, totally believable and fair. Chip is very annoying. He is like a crumpled corduroy man. He's so sad. No backbone. I wish he would go away. But for this character to have that speech makes zero sense. Like with most things on this show, it is never revisited. There is no consequence for it. It's just a thing that happens so we can move on. Like this conversation with Sybil, between Sybil and Stella, is interesting. But we don't know anything about her. She's rarely talked to or talked mm-hmm. about. Like, she's just kind of around to have, like, a dramatic moment, and then she disappears, yeah. and none of those things have consequences.
I would say the same thing about Mia, who is the black mm-hmm. woman who is sort of in charge mm-hmm. of the morning show. There's a tension between her and Daniel because she feels, not totally incorrectly, that he kind of expects from her more rallying to his defense than he would from a white boss.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And she feels like the demand on her to try to kind of manage his career, I get the sense, mm-hmm. it is very complicated for her because she has enough problems managing her own career and all the other stuff that she has to do. But at the same time, she is aware, as he keeps reminding her, of the racism that affects the show and the network. That's all interesting. And they touch it,
yeah.
but then they go over
yep.
so that we can go back to Jennifer Aniston sweating the idea that the tell-all book
yeah.
that Marcia Gay Harden is writing is going to reveal true things.
Right. And the great question is, like, I can never tell how much self-awareness she's supposed to have.
Oh, Alex?
I think almost none.
Yeah.
I think this show is sort of like the love child of Smash and The Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's The Newsroom good. Had this, like, wacky quality. But the thing that made me uncomfortable about The Newsroom is I could imagine people watching it and thinking it was a masterpiece. I can imagine no one watching this show and rooting or cheering for anything because there's no coherent idea here.
And I mean, look, this is all nitpicking,
mm-hmm.
but to me, it's like everything is potentially interesting on this show except the characters played by the extremely famous people.
I will make an exception for Juliana Margulies.
Correct.
Because I do think her character is interesting, and especially in this latest episode, it is fascinating to see that these writers are capable of writing a human being who is well-adjusted emotionally, mm-hmm. who is able to draw boundaries mm-hmm. around the things she
yeah.
does and does not want. But what she's doing on this show, I can't tell you because she shouldn't be here. She doesn't yeah. belong yeah. in the stratosphere.
I think that the work that they're doing with Bradley's relationship with Laura is actually really interesting and, like, shockingly successful and nuanced writing. Like, there are a couple of scenes where they're talking about Bradley's process of sort of coming to terms with her queer identity and also coming to terms with it being public and coming to terms with it being something her family has an opinion about. And I think they do real justice to the range of things she's dealing with on that front.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also think they do, like, incredible justice to how complicated Laura Peterson's response to that would be as a woman who was outed against her will in the late 90s and lost her job because of it. So
yes, that was shocking.
I was like, wow, like, that's good. That's, like, good writing. Who did that? Where did they go?
But at the same time, do you have a sense, and you both would probably have a better sense of this than I, but do you have a sense that they have developed, like, has Bradley always been involved with women? Has she, because her brother kind of implies that she mm-hmm. has, mm-hmm. but she also seems like maybe she hasn't. And, like, maybe yeah. this is a new thing for her. And, like, obviously any of those things are valid, right? And this is one of the things that happened. There's a scene where Laura refers to her as being in the closet, and Bradley says, I'm not in the closet. I'm just not actually a lesbian. And obviously, she's not necessarily a lesbian just because she slept with Laura. But It's an odd thing to say that seems to me to call for more explanation of why she's saying that. And is she saying she doesn't think there's anything to be in the closet about? Does she think, as Christina mentioned in one of her write-ups, it's not only a closet for lesbians? Like,
yes.
I think the way they write her, the way they write Laura, I think is interesting. But the way they write Bradley, I think is potentially interesting. But it's muddled.
Yes.
Yeah, Bradley is muddled. I think that's a great definition for Bradley. I think the largest problem with Bradley is that she feels like she is at most 33 years old, and she isn't, I don't think, supposed to be that young. Like, I think she is supposed to be around Reese's actual age, but then all of her development makes zero sense, because you should be more of an adult human person in the world at this age.
Right.
And she doesn't have any kind of ability to process, which she does, you know, lead back. It's always like, it's my family. I'm so messed up because of my family, which is like very fine. Her family does seem rather troubling, but there is just no cohesive idea of what her character is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I know it wouldn't make them have more chemistry if she was still brunette. I know that's not true.
Christina, you can't want that wig to come back. You can't.
I kind of want it to come back. I just feel like she felt gayer with the wig on. She felt gayer with the wig.
Much more gay energy in season one than she does now when she is regularly making out with a woman. But I don't think the gay energy she had in season one was anything anyone intended to be there.
No.
It's not like they were laying foundation for this character change in season two. I think this just happened. And if anyone's compared notes about how it would have existed in her life previously, I would be shocked.
I just never know what this show is doing. They'll come in and be like, the audience is so excited to see us reunite Alex and Bradley, who hosted together for 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah. Almost a year ago.
Yeah. Almost a year ago. But the audience, they have like a whole Alex and Bradley look back week.
Yeah.
Like a salute to Alex and Bradley. You can practically show everything they did because it was only 3 weeks. It's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. It makes absolutely no sense. But the first six episodes are currently available on Apple TV Plus. Because, of course, this was the show that was going to put Apple TV Plus on the map before it didn't, and Ted Lasso did.
It put it on the map in my heart. I'll tell you what.
Me too.
It's true. It's true. I'm delighted that you both care so much about this show that you can come and join me. Christina writes about the show sometimes at Autostraddle. You can also find it in Christina's newsletter. How do they find your newsletter, Christina?
You can find it at Christina Grace at Substack. It's called Chaos is the New Cocaine.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about The Morning Show. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And again, if you want more coverage of The Morning Show, I'm recapping each episode. You can find those at NPR.org. And that brings us to the end of our show. Phew! Thanks to both of you for being here. We made it.
Oh, God. Thank you for having us.
I'm so happy now.
Me too.
And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about Edgar Wright's new film, Last Night in Soho.